Welcome again to Jaded Gamercast. This is episode 7. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. See how quick that intro went this time?
Yeah, much better than last week.
I know. Yeah, eventually, we'll stop sounding like a couple of idiots.
No, that's not going to happen.
I highly doubt it as well. I'm sitting down with a glass of scotch to nurse my hangover. Nathan, what are you drinking?
Coffee, Irish style.
Oh, okay. Well, that also works. You save it. You beat me to. I couldn't even finish my sigh of disgust before you actually. It's Irish style. Okay, good man. Good man.
That is actually why I chose to say it that way, was to get that half sigh.
You, sir, are a comic genius. We'd like to thank everybody for tuning in to Jaded Gamercast this week. I think that the topic that we have for this week is rather interesting because.
Yeah, higher learning.
Oh, I know. I'm just saying it's interesting. God. Trust the driver, idiot. But now that Nathan has ruined my segue, we're just going to go straight into higher learning. So, higher learning, everybody. Chaos Space Marines for Warhammer 40,000. Nathan, I'll let you start it off.
Can I start with this? Hold on. Okay. No, Chaos Space Marines for Warhammer 40,000. You know, a lot of my disgust comes from the fact that I've been a longtime player and the last book was so amazing.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't want to take away a lot from this book because if all you're looking for is a book that gives you tons of options where you can get out on the table and wreck face and win games, the book is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Where my sighs come from is the fact that the design studio felt with this book that they absolutely had to take out all ability for a player to customize his army. It needs to be put on rails, as well as their decision to remove sort of like the fluffy god specific demons. Because
mm-hmm.
I mean, you know what, again, I've played for it. I was, you know, I'm all for toning down and changing things if that's the way they feel, because I mean, bloodletters in the previous Chaos Space Marine Codex were like mind fuckingly good. Like, they were just absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But all of my complaints with this book come from the fact that they decided to streamline every single army to just be like, look, you take 2 units of Plague Marines for objectives, 1 unit of, good God, have I drank this much already?
Wow.
1 unit of Khorne Berserkers, that's the one that I wanted.
Mm.
To be
well, they're very forgettable.
It is
of all
true.
The gods, Khorne is very forgettable.
Well, I mean, it doesn't help that he forgets his name on a regular
That's
basis.
That's very true.
You know, but it's just like, you know, you take 2 units of this, you take 1 unit of this, you take a unit of Terminators, because at 30 points for a 2+ save, you literally cannot go wrong.
Right. And they can have the Reaper autocannon, which is a great upgrade for that unit.
Dude, I'm also a fan of just, like, the basic workhorse of the Heavy Flamer for 5 points.
Yeah.
Fuck.
No, you know? I love the Heavy Flamer, too, especially on a deep striking unit.
Absolutely. So, I mean, like, it's just like there are some fantastic options and the way you can use icons to really kind of make units fit a specific role is great. It's just I have to sigh when I think about what that previous Chaos Space Marine Codex was capable of, because it could do absolutely everything this book could.
Right.
You know, there were a little more restrictions on who could take what marks, but who cares? But at the same time, you were also able to make 9 unique cult legion
mm-hmm.
armies that mm-hmm. all built and played differently. I mean, one tournament I played with my Dark Eldar years ago, it was a 4-game tournament, and every single game I drew a different Chaos Space Marine army, and no 2 games were the same.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whereas now, if I drew 4 Chaos Space Marine armies, it would be like playing the same guy 4 times.
Pretty much, yeah. No, and I think that feeds into what I was saying, to kind of echo what you said originally about them kind of streamlining the book. I think it goes further than that. They almost abandoned the fluff in the newest Chaos Space Marine codex, because really there was so much depth and personality that went into picking which god that you wanted to follow and building your army around it. But that's what made it different from Space Marines. I mean, the reason why you played Chaos Space Marines was because you didn't want to play Space Marines. And then when they streamlined it, it was like, oh, you're just playing Space Marines with horns. They've got horns and more skulls than normal. You know, like, this is really all that happened. I mean, I remember talking to somebody, and they were talking about building a Khorne Berserker army, and they're just like, what do you think I should take with my Khorne Berserker Devastator squad? You know, and they're just like, I think I'm going to use las cannons. And I'm just sitting there shaking my head going like, oh, yeah, if I remember correctly, that's how Karn the Betrayer always fought people, with a las cannon, so he could kill them from a distance. You know, like it's so an anthem to the armies that the fluff is built around, that when the new book came out and they kind of streamlined the demons into crappy shit nobody would ever want to take. And they made it where basically every army, no matter which god you took, was virtually interchangeable. It was just like, there was no point anymore. Like, why? What's the point of playing Chaos Space Marines now? In the previous book, there was all that fluff and there was all that character and story-driven stuff that had been put into the Codex. But at the same time, if you didn't want to use it, you could play the streamlined, straightforward Chaos Marine army by playing Black Legion, or even painting up the Khorne Berserkers or the Slaanesh Marines, and play them using the standard rules with no marks, even if you just like the models, right? I mean, it was like, you could still do it. That was my big point, is you could still have your cake and eat it too, as opposed to now, you're kind of stuck with the one option, and the one option is the same for every variation of that book, with, you know, very subtle changes that, as far as I'm concerned, are so minute that it's kind of pointless. So, I mean, I know I've talked to a lot of people who used to play Chaos Marines, and, you know, the new Chaos Marine Codex came out, and they're just like, they had one of two reactions. It was either like, yeah, it's okay, or they hated it. And even the people who said, yeah, it's okay, they stopped playing their Chaos Army. You know, I mean, it's not like they sold it. They didn't get rid of them all the time. It was just, they just stopped playing it. They opted for something with a little bit more flavor and personality, because right now they are just Space Marines with spiky bits and a couple of different options. You can take a Defiler instead. Ooh.
Well, no, I mean, and the worst part is I think, you know, we've talked about it before, where we've talked about how Games Workshop at one point had this shift in design philosophy, and they said, no longer are we going to rehash the old stuff. Chaos Space Marines was like, what, right before the Eldar Codex? They were like the second last book that rehashed the old shit and streamlined it, because then all these stellar codexes come out. And even when you look at Space Marines now, you just kind of have to shrug your shoulders and say, why would I play Chaos Space Marines? Right. Look at how many fucking toys Marine army gets.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of people playing Codex Marine armies using Chaos models. Because, I mean, don't get me wrong, the Chaos models are nice. There's a lot of fun stuff that you can do with them. And, I mean, you know, I love the new Demon Prince box. I've said it before, but, like, that's the only thing in your army that really stands out anymore. I mean, I played against a Chaos Marine player the last tournament that I was in, and it was virtually a Space Marine army. The only thing different was that he had taken a Defiler. Like, otherwise, it was almost indistinguishable from another Marine army player, unless they were playing Fetish Marines. So, you know, if I...
Go furries.
Yeah, go furries. No, I mean, it just, it induces that big sigh for me, because, like I've said before when we talked about demons, I used to play a Chaos Marine army, and I loved that army. It was competitive, it was fun, it had a lot of character to it, and I sold it, because when the new book came out, it utterly, completely smashed my urge to play that army. I had lost all interest in that army whatsoever, because it was such a drastic, painful change. And as far as I'm concerned, it was easily the worst codex change for people who had kind of built the fluff-oriented armies of the previous book, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, God forbid you have actually dedicated yourself towards doing one of the four, you know, marked legions. Because, I mean, if you did an undivided legion outside of Word Bearers, you also got the shaft.
Yeah.
For those of you that don't know, Word Bearers, the fluff behind their legion was that they utilized minor demons like crazy, because they felt that the lives of the Marines were far more valuable than the lives of demons. So if you had all of these phenomenal demon units painted up, sorry, you got shafted. Mm-hmm. But if you played any of the other undivided legions, yeah, you shrugged your shoulders. If you had Iron Warriors, you kind of put your Basilisk on a shelf because you couldn't run it anymore.
Right.
And that was kind of it. Like, you know, you didn't have to drastically change your list. You know, because really the only guy I know that used to run Chaos and still does played Iron Warriors, and that's basically what he did. He put his Basilisk on a shelf, kind of
painted
sighed
up a Demolisher.
Yeah. Well, a Vindicator, but they could have
Vindicator,
had those before too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even then they're just like, yay, I'm ahead of the curve, you know?
Yeah.
And that was it. Like, really now, you know, to talk about what you said, where it's just like it's a Marine army, his list, if not for his one Demon Prince, would literally be a Codex Space Marine list. In fact, yes. He ran Chaos Space Marines as his Iron Warriors sort of gun line to the preliminary rounds of Ardboys, and he eventually ended up going to the finals. And right after the preliminaries, I even told him, I was just like, you know, you could build this list using the Space Wolf Codex, and it'll be better and you'll get more stuff.
Right.
So what did he do? He built it using the Space Wolf Codex, and it was better and got more stuff. And I was just like, how is this even possible? Like,
well, yeah, and I mean, that's kind of what I was saying before, is that, you know, now you compare it to Space Marines, and it's just like, why would you play them? Like, there's really no draw to playing them. If you're playing them because you like the models and you like the story, you know, they just don't have the flavor that they used to have. Now they're just kind of sitting in the background, and it's like, yeah, mm-hmm. you can play them, but you know,
see, the only thing that I personally love about that book, which is something that I've seen all of zero Chaos players ever utilize, is the squad sizes bigger than 10. Because you know what? If I deployed and you dropped down 3 units of 20 Space Marines, I'd crap myself. I don't know how I'm going to crack through 20 Marines.
Right.
Like, that's huge, especially the Chaos ones that are kitted with both grenades, a pair of close combat weapons, and a bolter. Like, it's just like, are you kidding me? If I charge you, that's 40 attacks plus whatever Power Fist you have.
Yeah.
You know? If you charge me, that's 60 attacks. Like, Jesus fucking Christ. And that's not counting possible marks for Khorne mm-hmm. or Slaanesh for initiative mm-hmm. boosts. Like, it's just like, that is, you know, so, I mean, for me, it's just like, that is the one reason why I would play, you know, that
well,
and Cult Troops would be the only reasons I would run a Chaos Space Marine army.
Well, they're by no means gimped. I'd like, you know,
No. Like I said, they still beat face with the best of
yes.
them.
Yes. I mean, they definitely are not a gimped codex. They're not Necrons, you know. They're they're not one of those armies that, you know, oh, they, you know, the change was so bad that now they're terrible. They're still a very competitive army. It's just, I don't know, from the standpoint of the person who, you know, kind of like them for the background and for the fluff and for all that other kind of stuff, they've lost all of that. And for me, it's like, I'd rather paint a Marine army now. You know, I can have more fun with Marines now that Chaos is kind of lacking good demons and lacking, you know, the ability to kind of play the army the way it used to be played. And maybe that's just the jaded gamer in me. Da-dunch, it's the name of the podcast. But, you know, it's like, there's nothing to draw me toward it. I was trying to think about this earlier. Where I would say, like, well, how would I build that army? And it's, I can't even begin. It's just like, I know I'd take a demon prince. After that, I really don't know what else I would take. Like, I don't know if there's really anything else in that list that kind of catches my fancy to the point where I would say, like, ooh, I'd want to paint that, and I'd want to, you know, try to build an army around it. Now it's, there's nothing there for me.
I'm right there with you, because really the absolute only draw that I have is my love of the background and fluff for the Emperor's Children Legion, and that's why I even talked about God knows how many episodes back doing that sort of mid-heresy army.
It was two episodes.
I don't remember that far back. I can't even remember what I...
You know this is only episode 7, right? Like, you could have guessed a number at random and you would have been close. Was it episode 2? Actually, it was episode 4. Ah, I knew it was right in that range.
It's true. Yeah, but I can't remember what I did this morning. So how am I supposed to remember, like, weeks ago? No, but I mean, like, it's just... I'm drawn to the Legion and the fluff, and I absolutely want to do an army. And that is one of the things that I kind of wrestle with, where it's just like, do I just run them pre-heresy? And I don't mind painting up the beautiful purple and gold. And run the Marine Codex rules, just obviously not taking any of the new fancy shit that has happened in the last 10,000 years. Or do I run them using the Chaos Space Marine rules and get to have fun with those, you know, quite stunning looking Noise Marine models? Because Sonic Blasters and Blastmasters are tight. As long as we're talking the new ones and not the stupid rock and roll guitar ones.
Yeah, see, I'd just go pre-heresy. That would be my suggestion. But anyways, so... I think for the most part, you and I have the same reaction to it, which is just the Chaos Space Marine Codex. That's about it. I think that's about as much as you'll get out of us for that. Moving on to the primary topic for today's show. This is one that has sparked a decent amount of conversation between myself and Nathan, and of course has sparked a lot of conversation on forums and between, you know, tournament gamers and stuff like that. And it is pre-measuring and random movements and kind of things of that nature. A lot of this conversation is sparked because of the changes in Warhammer Fantasy 8th Edition, where they did away with the rules that said, you know, you had to guess all these things and you couldn't pre-measure anything. And in the new Warhammer Fantasy 8th Edition, charge range is no longer double your movement. It's now your movement plus 2d6. So, you know, units can have potentially very high charge ranges and potentially very, very low charge ranges. So it's a lot of people have said, you know, oh, it takes away the tactical advantage of the game. You know, the game's not tactical anymore. I think somebody that I had read said it best, where they're just like, you know, being able to guess ranges doesn't make you a good tactical wargamer. It makes you a good carpenter. You know, and I agree with that. I mean, I used to be a carpenter, so for me, guessing ranges was never a challenge, you know. But kind of getting to the random movement as the first bit of our conversation, I think it's funny because people are spending so much time whining, complaining, saying like, oh, if I roll this, you know, double ones and I don't get in when it's a surefire charge, I totally should have had it, you know. That's not good. Like, that doesn't show your generalship. It doesn't, you know, that's just random crap. It ruins the game. It doesn't make the game very tactical anymore. And I have to laugh because, you know, the chances of rolling snake eyes on a charge are probably around the same chances of you misguessing a charge by like a half an inch or so. You know, back when I used to play in the times when it was, you know, all charge ranges were set, you knew exactly what you had to do. I could eyeball the charge almost every time. There were very, very few instances where I would eyeball it and I'm just like, I would be, you know, like an eighth of an inch out of range, you know? I think that that's just as often. So people, you know, people are looking at the extremes of kind of what's happening here, and they really shouldn't be complaining because it's just like, stop looking at the extremes, you know? Stop bitching and complaining that, oh, dwarves should never be able to have a 15-inch charge move. Well, why? Yo, you're right. Dwarves should always suck, and we should make sure that every dwarf army has no option but to build an all-artillery gun line because they're so gimped in their movement. You know, come on, guys. Really? Is it that much of a devastation that a dwarf player might actually charge you? Especially now that charging doesn't mean that you strike first. So you're probably still going to get to strike first against these stupid dwarves. So what's the big deal? Who cares if they can charge 15? You know? Big deal. But hey, you know, people are really, really busy just looking at the extremes. That's all they care about is double sixes and double ones. Nobody, you know, really cares about the averages.
What I find, Blood of Kittens posted, and you know, I kind of hate plugging other people, but we do it all the time. But Blood of Kittens posted an article that I kind of agree with on Friday. And that was that the majority of people now, these win-at-all-cost people, the ones that are populating the forums and complaining, the reason for it is that when they go to a tournament, when they shell out their 50 bucks or whatever it is, they want to go knowing they've already won more than half their games because they have the perfect list, and we're going to talk about that maybe if we have time. You know, they've got their perfect list, and they know how to eyeball, and they have this, and they have that. And really, they don't want to test themselves. They're not good generals. And I think that's what it comes down to, because you know what? A great general is able to take anything from that snake eyes roll on your sure bet charge to, you know, missing out on half an inch or pre-measuring and knowing that the artillery is going to hit. It doesn't matter, because a great general is going to be able to take that knowledge, take that situation and run with it and still do good as a result. And really, like I said, I think that's what it boils down to, because, you know, yeah, they're talking about these extremes of if you roll snake eyes and if you roll boxcars, you know, and whereas you, again, it's a dice game. You'll roll seven more often than not.
Right, that's exactly it. Why would you bitch and complain about movement being random when everything else in the game is random? You know, I mean, I've said it before. I had a game where I was playing high elves, the best magic users in the game, and I missed cast five turns out of six. It's like, you know, does that accurately reflect my army's ability or my generalship? No, it's random, you know. I mean, I'll come in against you, you know, like we had against your stupid fucking wood elves, where it was just like, I had all the odds in my favor. I still lost that fight. I still lost that game. It's like, that's random. You know, random movement isn't all of a sudden taking away every other random element of the game, and it's not breaking every other random element of the game.
Well, you know, and that's the thing is, yeah, like I truly do love random charges, because the other thing is if we want to talk about historical accuracy, and I know, yes, it's a war game and whatever, but if you look at every great battle that's been fought in every war, nobody sat there and went just like, all right, well, they're exactly 3.5 miles away, so that means that our cannons are going to be able to do it, and then we're going to move our horsemen up 1 mile and turn them to face. Like, are you kidding me? Like, it's such bullshit, because, you know, like I said, deal with the situation as they pop up, and the random movement is really kind of offset by pre-measuring.
Yeah, well, I think it's offset by pre-measuring. But before we get into pre-measuring,
Yeah,
you
no,
know,
of course.
one of the things that I think is very interesting is the random movement is actually very easy to get used to. I think out of any of the big changes that we had coming through from the 7th to 8th edition in Warhammer Fantasy was that, you know, the random movements, you pick it up like that. 3 games in, you're already used to it. You've already changed your tactics on how you're going to be deploying your units and how you're going to be planning your charges. Where in 7th edition, it was a huge drawback of the game because you would play an army like ogres or you would play an army like high elves, and you knew that you were always, all, you know, if you had a 12-inch charge range, you knew to always be standing at 11. I'll just stop at 11, you know? And your opponent couldn't do anything. You could just sit there and play chicken all game long. Just, you know, oh, I'm always just going to stay out of his charge range. And yeah, you know what? A good general is not described by somebody who can know that I just have to back up my unit 2 inches to get you out of my charge range, or, oh, I just have to place outside of this range. And I don't care if you couldn't pre-measure in those old days. It didn't matter. It was easy enough to gauge. I mean, shit, if I had a 12-inch charge range, I know how much 12 inches is. I know if I'm at 13 inches or if I'm at 11 inches. Like you could gauge that 90% of the time. It was almost never a drawback.
No, you're absolutely right.
And you would have game after game after game where you would just sit there and play chicken with these guys, you
You
know?
know, that, and I mean, really, who were the best Warhammer players in 7th edition? They were the guys that could math hammer out a list, and they could see their distances. And that was it, and because it's just like basically, you know, because charging in the last edition had such a benefit that, you know, it was whoever saw their distances better would always win games. It never came down to movement, it never came down to positioning, and it was always, you know, and it never even came down to dice, because, you know, back then even there were so few dice being rolled, right? You know, it'd be like, look, I got five guys, five attacks, let's do it up, you know, and.
Well, and you know, it's been said many times that one of the bigger drawbacks to Warhammer Fantasy is that really seasoned generals, they build a list knowing exactly what they're going to do for the first 3 turns of the game. They deploy the same every time they play. The first 3 turns are always exactly the same. There's almost no variation whatsoever. There's almost no times where that plan gets thrown out the window. Now, that's really not so much the case. I think that now we get to see generals doing a lot more in the way of kind of reacting and kind of having a loose plan as opposed to this, you know, chess-like doctrine of, you know, well, first turn I move 4 inches with this unit, I move 6 inches with this one, and then that way it puts me within charge range of this one, and I can redirect with this one, you know. And it's just like the same people who are bitching about random charge ranges are the same people who are bitching about how cavalry sucks now. And it's like, but you can't whine and complain about the two because cavalry have almost such a standardized charge range that, like, it almost gets away from the idea of random charge ranges. When you're rolling three dice and taking the two highest, you're almost always going to get a good charge range. Very, very rarely are you going to roll double ones or 1-1-2 or something like that.
Well, exactly. You'd have to roll 3 ones to get an 11-inch charge range, which is still going to
Yeah.
outclass a lot of infantry
Right.
units.
So, okay, if you're going to sit there and bitch about random.
And that's like a 1 in 180-ish chance,
Right.
so.
You can't sit there and bitch about cavalry being useless anymore because, hey, cavalry do exactly what you said is the biggest flaw of 8th edition. You know? So, fuck is wrong with you people? Think about it. You know? Be a general. Put some time and effort into it. Oh, okay. For our listeners who maybe disagree with me, I'm not telling you to. Okay, yes, I am. Anyways.
All we do is sit on our soapbox and preach here.
Pretty
If
much.
you don't like it, turn it off.
Like somebody said when they posted a reply to one of the podcasts, they're just like, you know, well, this guy kind of uses filler, but I think it looks pretty cool because he's actually using a dwarf model. But you guys dealt with a lot of, what did he say? It was Adam. He had said, like, you guys dealt with a lot of, like, absolutes. And I'm just like, we're jaded old gamers. That's all we talk about is absolutes. Like,
There is no gray.
there's no room for disagreeing with us. But, yeah, I think moving on with what we were talking about, a lot of the random charge range problems are now mitigated by the fact that pre-measuring has gone out the window. Now, anyone who's unfamiliar with the idea of pre-measuring, essentially in the 7th edition Warhammer rules, you had to eyeball it. So if you wanted your knights to charge into, his unit of swordsmen, you knew that your knights would go exactly 14 inches from front to back. And your opponent, you could sit there and eyeball, well, is he 14 inches? Is he not 14 inches? And if they were outside 14 inches, it was a failed charge and you would only move 7 inches. If they were in, then you charged in and you got to strike first and you would devastate the unit and blah, 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 blah. Kind of in this edition now, that's not so much the case, but pre-measuring was always kind of a joke. Anybody who kind of knew what they were doing knew that you could almost always eyeball it by looking at other things on the battlefield. People would know exactly how long their movement tray was, so they could eyeball from the length of their movement trays.
Well, and the
You
other
know,
th
you would deploy. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
well, I was going to say the other thing is even in 7th edition, it was totally okay to measure when you were deploying. So, I mean, you'd even see the guys where they'd be, like I remember going, I played against an Empire guy once that actually had a pen and paper because he was literally, using math to line up his artillery
Yeah.
shots, because he'd be like, well, I deployed
Well,
12
yeah.
inches up, you deployed 12 inches up, you moved 8, so I know we're this far out, and this to that tree is this, so now let's just solve for X, and okay, I'm gonna guess this, and he was right on every time. It was kind of
Well,
a
yeah,
douchebaggy
exactly.
thing because it slowed the game down.
No.
Oh, it just slowed the game
We
down.
all do it. We all do it to an extent.
I don't care that he did it with a pen and paper. I just hate that it took him almost 5 minutes to make his guess thing every shooting phase. You're just like, come on, dude. Like, come on.
That's just you hating people who are bad at math. But no, I mean we all did it. I mean we all would sit there and go, well, we both deployed 12 inches from the table edge, and he moved up 8, and I moved up 6, which means the distance in between used to be 24 minus 8 minus 6. Da 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 da. I mean it wasn't like it was rocket science. It was just like they in theory it worked great. In theory it was what made a good player better, but at the end of the day, you would play 10 games and you might have one where you misguessed. It was so inconsequential. The only thing it really created were arguments where people would, accuse other people of pre-measuring, or, they would say, oh, yeah, I'm 11 inches. No, you're 11 and, 1/4 inches. And they're just like, no, but that's blah, blah, blah. It was a waste of time, especially when you start dealing with like wheeling your units, which was a pain in the ass to do. Which they fixed in this new edition for charges, which I absolutely love. The other thing about pre-measuring is if you played on the same gaming table regularly, there was no point. I mean, I know on my gaming table that, the distance from the edge of the table to this one little road or patch of grass or whatever it is like 12 inches, because I've played on that table so many times. So what's the point? Especially with the new Games Workshop pre-molded plastic tables that they put out. It's basically sectioned into 24-inch grid. Like, exactly the distance from here to here because that you know exactly where the middle point in the table is.
Yeah, I can see the seam.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, it's just there's no point. It's an outdated idea. At the end of the day, it really doesn't add anything to the game. It doesn't make the game more tactical. I think all it does is it makes the game quicker, it makes the game more fun, and it helps to avoid arguments and accusations from other people.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. And I think that argument point is the best because with pre-measuring, I can, if I'm in my declare charge phase, I can measure it up and be like, okay, we're 12 inches away. I have a movement 5, so I need 7, right? And you can get that agreement from your opponent right then and there. So when you roll the dice and you get 7, you're in. So I mean, it absolutely helps that. And I really think that that pre-measuring again, it helps determine, like I said, a better general. Because if it comes down to the fact that, oh, I saw 10 inches better than you did, what does that prove other than I can see 10 inches better than you? At least with pre-measuring, everyone has the exact same information available to them. And all of a sudden, now it becomes about positioning. It becomes about maneuvering again, which is what the game should have been in the first place.
Oh no, the hardcore forum monkeys, they're the ones who are going to tell you that it actually is the child's edition. It's the starter edition of Warhammer. We've lost all of our tactics because now all of these things are random and you just march forward and hope you get into charge ranges. Bullshit. That's bullshit. You know what? Like, it's not the case. If you feel like now you're completely kneecapped in your games because you have to deal with random movements, like you say, learn how to be a general. Learn how to deal with it. Failing a charge in this edition does not put you out of position.
No.
You might move forward 2 inches. It's not like you fail a charge and your knights move forward 7 inches and now all of a sudden they're out in the middle of nowhere ready to get countercharged. No, they might move forward 2 inches and they just sit there like they were before. It's not like you're losing your army because of a failed charge like it used to be in the older edition, where if you failed a charge, you literally had a unit standing out in the middle of your army that was just ready to take it up the
Well,
ass.
yeah, especially if you had your line ready and you declared
Yeah.
three or more charges all at once, and like let's say one unit was out, now they got two flanks and an ass hanging out there, and you're just like, well, I hope to God that he tries to deal with my units in combat and leaves that unit alone, because otherwise it's dead. It's goodbye victory points, because you
Yeah.
just sort of shuffle up or
I used to play bass for 2 flanks and an ass. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Nice.
Hey, I had to throw it in there.
Bad jokes and puns, it's what we will.
That is a rock and roll name if I ever heard it. I'm now copywriting my rock and roll band name as 2 flanks and an ass. That could also be my porno company at the same time, which is a interesting business idea.
Is true. And the debut movie or album, whatever way you guys go,
Yeah,
could be called Hanging Out There.
that is a business. Oh.
All right.
Well played, sir.
Yeah, look, I if you were going to take half of what I said, I had to throw in the other half.
Let's do it.
No, but I mean, like, and even as you said, where if it's your fast unit and you misjudged it by half an inch, now they're completely unsupported. You're not going to be able to get up to them to bail them out. And basically, you just got to take it, and it's just like, well, there goes my unit, right? My cavalry, they're gone. I don't know. Like I said, I just think pre-measuring is such a good addition to the game that honestly, what I'd like to see is I'd like to see 6th edition 40K get it.
I think the next edition of 40K definitely needs it. I think when it comes down to even again going back to fantasy, we talk about like artillery. Artillery now is basically there's no guess range. You just place it and roll to scatter. Your ballistic skill does kind of come into play if you're firing indirectly, so it does reflect the skill of the unit a little bit better. But I mean, I really like I like the idea that now, yeah, you just place it. It's quick, it's easy, there's no complaining, there's no bitching or accusations of cheating. It's just, yeah, go place your cannonball wherever you want to place it, as long as it's within range, And hey, go for it. But you and I both know, if you've ever played an Empire player, they know exactly how far away you are for placing a cannonball. I think maybe once or twice in my entire gaming career have I ever seen an Empire player misjudge a distance for a cannon so horrendously that like their guess was like 8 or 9 inches past my unit. You know what I mean? Like it's very, very rare for somebody to not know the proper distance for firing a cannon
Oh no,
or a
you're
mortar
absolutely
or a
right.
stone thrower.
In all the times that I've played, the only thing that you're praying, because they're saying the number and it's almost bang on, is you're hoping they roll a 10 or a misfire, so that way it just
Right.
either overshoot.
Which is still the same.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly the point. It's just like they're basically placing it where they were gonna guess it anyway, give or take an inch,
Right.
and then you're praying to God that it either misfires or it overshoots horrifically.
Yeah. But yeah, like you said, moving into Warhammer 40,000, I think, the addition of pre-measuring to Warhammer 40,000 would be really good. I think since everything in that game especially is even more simplified to the point of everything being in increments of six, you either charge six or you're charging 12 or you're moving 12 and charging six. I mean, everything is in increments of six.
See.
There's kind of no point. I mean, at the end of the day, what does it accomplish? To have no pre-measuring as a rule of the game. It doesn't make anyone a better general.
No, and
And the times you miss are rare.
well, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's the thing, is just like pre-measuring, if you were to just take fifth edition and add in pre-measuring, all of a sudden you no longer have that, oh, well, if I'd known I was out of charge range, I'd have double tapped. You know, right. like things like that, where it's just like, you know what, right. it helps you as a general make better decisions. But I think if you're really going to utilize it, add in random charge distances as well.
I agree. We brought this up. I brought this up before the podcast with Nathan, and your first inclination that was that you disagreed.
You know, it was because, you know, as you said, everything in 40K is so streamlined. It's so straightforward. But then when you think about it, if you have a random charge range, like without a random charge range, and I pre-measure, I can say, well, I'm 6.5 inches out, so I'm going to shoot you in the face hard. I'm going to double. I'm going to rapid fire. I'm going to go to town, and I'm just going to try to wreak as much hell as I can with my shooting because I know I can't charge you. But if that charge is random, now all of a sudden, are you going to shoot, or is combat better?
And I really do feel that the two go hand in hand.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing. Is like initially I was just like, but that's stupid. And then I thought about it. I'm like, you know what? No, they really do complement each other very well, because I think random charge ranges gives shooting armies that like breath of hope. Because I mean, like, come on, everyone has either played a combat army versus, you know, a shooty army, or plays a shooty army and they've run into a combat army where it's literally just like, you know, can the shooty?
You know for a fact that turn two you're in combat, or turn three you're in combat, so you have to hope to literally win the game in the first two turns.
Absolutely. You know, whereas random charges, all of a sudden things are different. They could give you an extra round of shooting where you need it. It could, you know, it could even rob a round of shooting if you're desperate and you're going to go for the long charge. Yeah. You know,
yeah, because right now in 40K, if, you know, you have rapid fire weapons, you can't shoot them before you take the option to possibly charge. So, you know, you're kind of sitting there going like, well,
do I take
the chance and utterly waste this unit to the point where it literally just stands there? Like, it doesn't even move if it fails a charge. It just stands there.
Yeah.
And you just it makes no sense for this unit to just be like, okay, let's charge. Oh, we're out. Hold on, guys. Back to where we were standing.
Yeah.
You know, it's pointless. I mean, at least have them move forward a little bit more if it's a random charge range on a failed charge, so that you can at least represent the idea that these, you know, the sergeant in the unit has declared a charge and they've started running.
Only to realize they're never going to make it.
Yeah, but, I mean, hell, why not? You know, is it going to ruin the game? Is it going to break the game? Absolutely not. I think that it definitely does add a certain amount of, like you said before, generalship in the way of being able to adapt to various situations. You know, mm-hmm. You're never always going to charge 6 inches. You know, somebody skips on a pothole, unit gets mucked up, you know.
Suppressing fire.
I mean, any number of things can stop a unit from getting its full charge range. But, I mean, in Warhammer 40,000 right now, it's always a guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you know, as long as I'm within six, done and done. No problem whatsoever, which kind of brings up an interesting point of, you know, movement being so streamlined in that game, and the fact that you are able to move and assault in the same turn, as opposed to fantasy, where at the beginning of the turn you have to decide whether you're going to move mm-hmm. or charge. It almost kind of makes you wonder, you know, are charges, if you were to do that, would charges need to be relegated to the movement phase as opposed to the assault phase?
See, I'd say no, because right now Warhammer 40,000 does have random charges if you're charging into difficult terrain.
Right.
You know, and I mean, it absolutely works. Because, I mean, like, honestly, I can count the number. It's a two-hand count. I can count the number of times where my 500-point Archon and Incubi squad ran into difficult terrain and rolled snake eyes and failed a 2-inch charge. Yeah, two hands. Does that make me say, oh, random charge range is garbage? Absolutely not. So, I mean, I personally think that the turn structure still fits, because you still have to make that decision. You still have to say, look, I'm 5 inches out, or I'm however far, you know, whatever mechanic they choose, whether it's the difficult terrain mechanic now or the fantasy mechanic. You know, you have to look at it. You're going to pre-measure it out, and you're going to say, you know, holy fucking shit, do I shoot or do I charge? And the other thing that 40K does that also makes that an even harder decision is with casualty removal, because you're not dealing with big blocks. Mm-hmm. I have denied charges by pulling casualties from the front.
Oh yeah, we've all done that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's the strategy and the tactics. Do you want to take that charge? In which case, I'm going to pull my casualties from the back. Do you, as the person that's trying to make that charge, do you want to risk failing it? So, you know, do I shoot my pistols? Do I drop the flamer?
I've had days where I've literally had a unit with that I've said, I'm just not going to shoot because I don't want you to remove guys from the front. I want to be sure that I get that charge. I think that this also brings up another interesting fact. If we were to do random charge ranges, it would be somewhat interesting because, again, in Warhammer 40,000, units don't have a move characteristic. Everyone is assumed to move 6. It's that whole streamlined idea. So the random charge range, if you were to, say, roll 2 dice and take the highest, would essentially reduce charge ranges. Or if you're saying roll 2 dice and you know, that's your charge range, well, hey, then your average is 7. Charges will get a little bit longer or potentially fail. Which I think it's a great idea. I would really like to see charges being moved away from always being 6 inches to just being 2d6. Yeah. You know, like we said before, people are bitching and all they're looking at is the extremes. But I think, you know, a 2d6 charge range is pretty straightforward. And, you know, there is always a reason for people getting this massive heroic charge range because, you know, whether they're inspired or, you know, they just get this burst of speed or whatever it is, but hey, why not? Why, you know, like, is it really so bad for a unit to be able to charge? Now, again, we're not saying that we're going to ignore rules like fleet of foot, and we're going to, you know, obviously armies that have fleet of foot and all these other different kinds of things, rules would have to be adjusted to make sure that they weren't overly powerful. You know, maybe you treat them like cavalry where they roll 3d6 and take the 2 highest or whatever it is. But I think that it would add a lot to the game, and I think that it would make the game a bit more likable for me personally, and I think that it would stop, like you say, those guys who show up to tournaments with this pre-built list that is point-and-click guaranteed to win to actually learn to be good generals and really deal with, you know, things changing and things not going your way, as opposed to just you win games because you've got this crazy list or you lose games because the dice don't love
it. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, like, honestly, I would love changes like that because I do think that fantasy now in 8th edition requires you to be a different general to be able to juggle all those different variables. Because you know what? You know, when you're banking on a charge and you absolutely need it and your dice roll like shit, yeah, you know, you just have to take, you just got to sigh, and all of a sudden you're working out contingency plans. Unlike before, in 40K, when you're just like, but I know I can make that charge, and if not, you know, if I'm going to be really conservative, I'll wait one more turn lining it up, playing that game of chicken you talked about. You know, just because I really want to make sure that I do pull this charge off, and you know I want it, so you're going to start nudging back, and, you know, so I mean, it's just, it's just one of those things where it's just like, you know what? I think that the random chance, these random elements, make the games enjoyable because at the end of the day, we're playing with dice. We're playing with toy soldiers and dice. And if you get so bent out of shape about, oh, well, there's no skill because it's all just luck now, then seriously, go play World of Warcraft. Like, if you want a game that is all quote-unquote, I'm doing air quotes, even though, you know, podcast, that is... skill-based, go play World of Warcraft, because at least there everything's preset and predetermined, and you can pick your skills and know walking into a fight exactly who's going to win it. If you'd rather play something...
If you're a huge fan of, repetition, then yeah, this isn't the game for you.
No, absolutely not. But I mean, if you are someone that can roll with the punches or enjoys rolling with the punches, where you're just like, I don't even know if this forest is going to attack me, and I'm Wood Elves.
Well, I think in best, you know, in real life, it shows in the saying that, you know, even the best laid plans still have the potential to fail. You know, you can come in and it's a route. You know for a fact that we're going to win this. And guess what? It doesn't go your way. Things don't work. Luck or whatever it is not on your side. That's real life. You know, I mean, I should have whooped the shit out of your Wood Elves, but it just doesn't work that way sometimes. That's why we play a dice game, is because, you know, if we all wanted the straightforward everyday game, we'd all be playing chess. But, you know, kind of going back to Warhammer 40,000, I think that it would benefit also in the way of artillery. You know, you talk about, like, guest range weaponry, they've already done away with it. You know, 40K had done away with guest range in the newest edition, and nobody seemed to care. In fantasy, they do away with it, and all of a sudden, it's just like, this game is broken. cannons are laser guided missiles now. Like, they are not. They work the same as they fucking did before. It's just now you don't have to sit there and say, should I guess 24 or 25? Oh, it didn't matter to begin with. I think that the random charges, the pre-measuring, all of those things, all they do is they streamline the game in a good way, to the extent that it's removing all of the crap that comes as a byproduct.
That's very fair.
You know, it removes all of the garbage from bad players and, you know, people bitching about that extra quarter of an inch, or people saying, oh, he's a bad sport because he didn't give me the charge when I was, you know, a hair out of range. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it removes that. It gets rid of it. Hey, it's random. Like you said, you line up your charge beforehand, you measure it, you say, I need 7. Rolled it. Hey, look, I got 7. Yeah. There's no argument there, you know? There's no, oh, I don't know, man. That's not quite exactly what you know? You know before you roll the dice. And people don't, like, there's not even the opportunity to get pissed off about it. Unless you're me and I'm literally screaming at my dice.
Hey, look, if I've learned anything, it's that, elephants are afraid of mice, stegodons are afraid of elves.
Oh, fuck you.
Hey, look, it wouldn't be an episode if I couldn't take a cheap shot at your lizards.
You son of a bitch. But yeah, I keep kind of coming back to the idea that don't people understand that this is a good thing? Like, yes, I understand how you could look at it and say the game is less tactical now, but stop and think about it, you know, play 10 games, really give it a chance, learn how to adjust to it, and tell me that it's not still a tactical game in the exact same way that it was mm-hmm. before. Movement and your double movement value for marching is still all about putting yourself in position, just like it was before. But now, it's not the end-all be-all when it comes to charging. Before, if you had a movement 5 army, it was just like, yeah, you just play chicken, you just always get a little bit further out than he can get, and then he'll never mm-hmm. charge you. So, I would challenge anybody who feels differently to, you know, keep playing the game and really start trying to think about it in that different... Just change that mindset. Stop playing 7th edition. You know, go back and play an 8th edition game with the mindset of, you know, this is a new game and mm-hmm. I'm learning a new game. And you'll be surprised at how good it is. You'll be surprised at how much more fun and how much faster the game plays. And that's not a bad thing. I've heard people bitch and complain and say, oh, it's, you know, games are so quick now. They're over by turn 4. Well, is that necessarily a bad thing? I mean, we still, you know... Before, it was every game went to turn 6 because you couldn't finish a game in 6 turns.
No.
You know, so now, hey, yeah, a game might end in turn 3 or 4 now because, you know, it was a crushing defeat. Why, what, you know, like, what's the boon to playing a game that needs 8 turns to finish? Does that make it better to you? Does playing a 3-hour game better in your eyes than playing a 2-hour game?
No, not at all. And I think a lot of this, you know, it's funny because this same song and dance happened when 5th edition 40K came out, you know? And even in the deepest, darkest corners of the internet, you still kind of see these same discussions going on about how certain elements of 5th edition broke the game, you know, and it's terrible and there's no skill in it because... You know, people abhor kill points, even to this day, whereas I personally love them.
Oh, I fucking hate kill points.
See, you know, because, you know, the thing with kill points...
did you guys notice how he didn't even want to get into it? He's just like, we don't have time to start talking about this. It's a whole other podcast. So he just kind of sighed and moved on with the topic. Good for you, Nathan. Way to show restraint.
You know, but it's just, you know... Everything about 5th edition, when it first came out, everyone, you know, there were some things where people were like, bravo, run, everyone can run, that's excellent. And then there were other things where they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? This is stupid, it ruins the game. But, you know, here is 5th edition, we're, what, almost 3 years in? Honestly, you know, it's the best edition of Warhammer 40,000 I've ever played because it does some of those things that we've talked about. It streamlines it. It makes figuring out who won... better, faster, and easier, because you know what I am happy about? I have not had to take a calculator with my fucking army case to a tournament for 3 years now, because every last game of 4th edition always came down to victory points. So then everybody would have to bust open their calculators and their army lists and start scratching off, you killed this is below 50, this is fine, you killed this is below 50, you know, and then you had to start divide, you know, figuring out how many points each unit was worth, adding them all together, adding any bonuses you might have gotten. And it was such a fucking pain in the ass, to be quite honest, because it was stupid. It literally added 10 minutes at the end of every game just so you could just at the end you could shake your guy's hand and be like, man, it was a draw. Can you believe it? I mean, it doesn't even look like a tie. I've got 10 guys left. You've got 50. How did that happen?
Right.
You know? And it's just, there are certain things that 5th edition did that I absolutely love. And really, it is like 8th edition fantasy now. You've got the old holdovers, people that are sick of being told that they actually have to think for a change, that they have to change their list, that they have to paint new stuff because they haven't done that in 4 years. You know, and I think those are the ones that are complaining the loudest because, you know what, like I said, this edition is...
People are afraid of change. That's always been the case. Myself included.
Change is scary.
We spent all the beginning of the episode talking about how I don't like change when it came to my Chaos
absolutely.
Army.
Yeah.
I'm right there with you for the most part. I mean, I don't necessarily like kill points, but I do appreciate exactly what you're saying, which is just like, you know what? It's so clear who's the victor, who's not the victor at the end of the game that, you know, you can be, you know, getting ready and packing up and kind of getting yourself going. I think the counter argument to that would be that some people do tend to kind of prefer the more accurate reflection of who won the game as opposed to the quick and dirty way of doing it.
Who won the game? The guy like that achieved the mission objectives or the guy that stood back and never budged?
I'm not even talking about mission objectives. I'm talking about like straight kill points.
Yeah, no, but I mean, the thing that kill points, and this is all I'm going to say, and I won't get baited into anything else. Kill points balances out the other two different types of mission scenarios. Because if everything was either victory points, what you killed, or objective based, then every single army would just be swarms of 5-man squads in transports. Because they are absolutely ideal at capturing objectives. And if it was victory points and I lost my 35-point Rhino, who fucking cares? It's 35 points. But right. Kill points balance out 40K from a list-building perspective because you have to say, I'm going to build this list. It's going to give up 40 kill points. I'm going to lose one-third of every game I play. I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, okay, you know, you're okay with losing a third of all of your games. Me personally, I'd rather build a list that can juggle both of those, those needs at the same time. You know, not giving up kill points easily at the same time as capturing objectives easily. So that's where I think kill points balancing. Because if you just look at kill points as a standalone function of the game, I agree it's broken. You know, why is a 35-point Rhino worth as many victory? You know, as many points in terms of victory conditions as a 400-point Terminator squad. That's where it breaks down, but it's when you look at the greater whole of how does Warhammer 40,000 play.
Right. Yeah, I we'll leave it at that. I won't get baited into anything else as well, because I've got more than a few things to say about that. But anyways, moving on, I think that we've said what we're going to be saying about pre-measuring and random charge ranges and things of that nature. I would really, really love to see that for 6th edition Warhammer 40,000. I think that would kind of reignite a bit of my love for the game. From this edition, just kind of being able to go back and play a little bit better game. As we've said in many times, one of the biggest problems that I have with Warhammer 40,000 is in the game of Warhammer 40,000, you can almost always break the entire game down to like that one dice roll that you failed. You know, it was that one dice roll and your entire army was fucked from that point on. I don't feel like that happens in Warhammer Fantasy, and that's kind of what drew me to it over the years was that I would have games where, yeah, the dice didn't go my way and I still won. You know, I still won out of generalship, or I still won out of, you know, the right kind of luck in the right places. But I was never able to just come down and say it was that one dice, you know. And if it was, it was very, very rare. Moving on to our stupidity check for this week. Nathan, it is your turn.
Yeah.
Hit us with the gold.
Well, it really is a nice tie-in for what we're talking about, but this past week at work, because I've actually had a chance to surf the internet, I've been trolling a lot of Warseer, and specifically the fantasy sections, and I would say that there were four separate threads from four separate posters that all talked about how they refuse to play 8th and they're going to keep playing 7th edition. And to me, yeah, you know, to me, I'm just like, you know what, that has to be a failed stupidity check, because, you know, that would be like your parents offering you a brand new car. You know, it's just like, here, son, you graduated. Here's a Porsche 911, and you going, nah, I love my Geo Metro. It's just fantastic. The gas mileage is great on it, you know. And that hatchback, you can't compare. Like, it's just such an idiotic thing, because at the end of the day, the edition is better. If you want to play in an edition where the one guy with the Demons of Chaos army gets to win every game by virtue of them being Demons of Chaos, kudos. You know, all I can do is shake my head and sigh heavily, because you're fucking stupid. Like, it's just...
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've had more than a few people say that, where they're just... They've gone on and on about why they love 7th edition and how 8th edition breaks it, and they're going to keep playing 7th edition in their basement. No, I'm never going to get rid of my 7th edition rulebook. That's the golden age rulebook, you know, and I don't get it. To me, it is pretty stupid. It's just, you know, like, really, are you so ingrained in what you already know that you absolutely refuse to try to relearn the game and, you know, get a little bit more enjoyment out of it? I mean, if we always played 7th edition and the game never changed from 7th edition, after a while, I would just stop playing.
I'd already reached that point.
Yeah, I know that you had already reached that point for 7th edition because of those exact reasons. And I know that a lot of other people did as well. One of the things about 8th edition was I saw more posts about 8th edition from people who had said that, you know, boy, I read the rules and I played the game, and boy, I love that. Just reignited my passion for this game, because it really did make it more fun. It really did make it more entertaining, as opposed to just, like you say, you just line up and if you're not playing the army that can capitalize on every flaw of 7th edition, why are you even playing, you know? So
Vampire counts and demons.
Yeah, that was exactly it. It was just, if you're playing vampire counts, you're fucked. If you're playing demons, you're pretty much fucked. You had to hope for an ungodly bad set of rolls to have any sort of chance, because it was Math Hammer at its worst, and it was pre-measuring, or it was, you know, like gauging and pre-measuring at its worst. And it was, you know, all of the flaws of that magic phase at its worst. So, you know, like I said, if you weren't playing an army that capitalized on the flaws of 7th edition, it was like, why are you even playing? Especially in a tournament setting.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know what, guys? You failed your stupidity check. Fucking pick up the rulebook, play a couple of games, and you know what? Try to learn something. You know, try to do things a little bit different. Try to change your thinking. I guarantee you, you'll enjoy it a hell of a lot more.
Yeah, you know, for me, I always say, if you're on the fence about something or you don't think you like it, go to a tournament, because when you go to a tournament, you get 4, 5, 6 games in over like 1 or 2 mm-hmm. days, and it literally is that sort of concentrated experience where, you can look back at it on it as a whole and just be like, you know what, it makes sense to me. I get it. Because, I mean, that was the thing with 5th edition 40K with me. It first came out, I was so upset with some of the bigger changes to it that I was just like, I'll just play fantasy. I got talked into going to one 40K tournament, played 6 games over a weekend, and I was just like, I get it. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, I mean, like, that's all I can say to you about 8th edition is go to a tournament and you'll finally get to see the beauty of it on a grand scale, because you get that concentrated, you know, exposure to it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm at the bottom of my glass of scotch, and if anybody has any suggestions for topics or anything that they would like us to talk about here on the show, please feel free to email us at jadedgamercast@gmail.com. We are more than happy to take suggestions, and I mean, heck, you know, one of the funny things about making a podcast is, you know, when you first start thinking about doing it, you have 5 or 6 topics that you can't wait to talk about. Soon as you get to episode 6, you're just like, what are we talking about this week? I mean, we always find something, but it's kind of funny. As soon as you start thinking about it, you get caught into these situations where you worried that you can't fill an hour. So, hey, if there's anything you guys think that we should talk about or you would like to hear us talk about, by all means, send us an email. We'd be happy to hear from you. But once again, my name is Lang.
And I'm Nathan. Cheers.